today I want to talk about that something more. That something more in life that we are sometimes searching for and longing for. I don't know about you, but maybe... I forgot to put my mic on this morning, but I'm still going to come down because I really don't want to do this part from behind here. Maybe... I don't know, have you ever thought about that more that we sometimes feel within us, that longing that is really deep within our souls, that maybe life is going great and maybe it's not, but there's just some sense that, is this all there is? Maybe after you've lost a loved one and you wonder, is this all there is? Maybe after a child just graduates from, now we're graduating from kindergarten, elementary school, middle school, but high school, and goes off for the first time to be in college by themselves, and you find yourself without that child or those children now for the first time, and you find yourself sitting at home, and maybe you're looking at your spouse for the first time in a long time, and like, oh, hi, I forgot who you were. We do this thing together, right? And you wonder to yourself, is this all there is there's not something more? Maybe life has just gotten dull and you've just been going through the motions and getting from point A to point B to point C, just trying to make it through the day because work is hard, because there's not enough to do in your life maybe, or because there's too much to do in your life and you're overwhelmed, and you just get to the end of the day exhausted and plop in your bed and you're about to fall asleep, and you think to yourself, is this rat race all there is? Is there not something more? Am I the only one? Is there anybody that feels this way sometimes? Y'all are like, no. Okay, I see a couple of hands now. Like y'all are, some of y'all are with me this morning, and some of y'all are so shining up in the world as you're talking about. Well, let me ask you a question. I want you to think about it, honestly. If I were to ask you, what is it that you have been seeking in life? Like really deep down in the recesses of your heart and your mind and your soul. What's your purpose? Might be another way of asking that question. Gosh, for what, 20 or 30 years now we talk about purpose and all those books that people wrote about life and purpose and all that kind of stuff. Some of them are good and some of them are kind of fluff. What's your purpose? What's that deepest longing in your soul to live? What's that inescapable drive that's inside of you? What's at the center, the very center of your heart and your mind and your soul? I wonder how you would answer that question. Whatever it is, just sit with those questions for a moment. Think deeply. What is that purpose? What is that longing? What is that hope? What is that dream? What is that desire? What is that need? Well, as you think about that question, the one answer I was hesitant to really ask some folks to answer this question. I thought about doing that, and then I thought, well, these are kind of personal things. Y'all might not want to share these things with me this morning. But the answer that anytime you ask a big question like this to youth, when I was doing youth ministry, you know the answer that you give as a young person because it's the right answer when you're sitting in church with your youth pastor? What's that answer to every church question? God, Jesus. Yeah, that's the answer, right? So, yeah, that's nice. Folks hear that answer. I remember as a person working with youth, I would hear those answers like, yeah, roll my eyes. Okay, let's get deeper than that. Not that that's not a great answer, but sometimes we just throw that word God out there as if we all know exactly what that word means, as if we're all exactly on the same page with what we mean when we say God. And the truth is, in our world today, we are not on the same page when we think about God, when we say that word God. Just think about how we use that word God in our culture today. We are all over the place. God help me, oh my God, God, and some other words that follow. We're not all meaning the same thing when we say the name God in our culture today. That's the easy answer. And so if you're thinking, well, God is
is to give God glory. That's a great answer from the Bible, and some theologians talked about that. I wrote a bunch of books about that. That's great and nice, but I want you to get deeper. I want you to describe what you mean by even that kind of statement. Maybe you were thinking when you heard the questions, well, just to live. To live is a longing and a purpose and a drive. To be happy is what you hear when you go and ask this question to folks across the United States. That's the most common answer. To be happy, to experience joy, to do good is another answer that sometimes you get from people. To do good, to be a good neighbor, as Jesus called us to be perhaps. To be worthy is another answer that I think is sort of right there on the surface of this question when you talk to people. And that to be worthy, of course, is loaded with meaning. To be worthy in the eyes of God, to believe what needs to be believed, to live in a way that God would look upon you and call you worthy. Hint for another sermon down the way, God is already calling you worthy no matter what you do, but that's for another Sunday. To find meaning, perhaps, is one of those answers. To be loved is another answer that you sometimes hear when you ask these, what do you want in life? What's that deep down desire and longing and purpose? Well, I want to take a look at this kind of question, this something more that I think rests on the surface of our lives, by looking at a story in the Bible, a story about Jacob discovering his deepest longing and purest purpose. It comes from the book of Genesis chapter 28, beginning around, I think, verse 17, 10 or so. And so we'll read this together and just listen for what happens in the story, for who is changed and what is changed and how that change happens and what that change is. The story begins about Jacob leaving Beersheba and going towards a land called Haran. Jacob came to a certain place and stayed there for the night because the sun had set, and taking one of the stones of that place, stone that was probably on the ground, he picked up that stone and put it under his head. Some of us are living lives as if we have stones under our heads, and that's the way it feels. And he lay down in that place and he dreamed that there was a ladder. You remember this story now, perhaps, Jacob's ladder, right? A ladder set up on the earth, the top of it reaching to heaven, from earth to heaven, a ladder. Perhaps an image of that something more that we long for, being down here but wanting to get up there, whatever that up there is. That longing, that desire for more. And the angels of God were ascending and descending upon this ladder. The story continues, and the Lord stood beside Jacob and said, I am the Lord, the God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. Just in case you've forgotten, those were Jacob's parents and grandparents, right? The land on which you lie, I will give to you and to your offspring, and your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth. Like the dust of the earth. What an amazing image. As plentiful as the dust of the earth, perhaps. As enduring as the dust of the earth, and yet as frail as the dust of the earth. From dust we came, into dust we shall return. There's a loaded image right there. And you shall spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south, and all the families of the earth shall be blessed in you and in your offspring. Know, God says, know that I am with you. And I will keep you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised to you. Then Jacob woke from his sleep and said, and you'll remember this line because we like to put it on pieces of art that hang on our wall, or even those nice little words that just roll across your wall that we put in our houses today, or put it on bumper stickers or the front covers of bulletins. I thought about putting these words on the front cover of the bulletin this morning and I went a different direction. But Jacob woke up from his sleep, pay attention, and said, surely the Lord is in this place and I did not know it. Surely the Lord was in this place, and I did not know it. And he was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. This is a story, I think, at its very core, at its very essence, a story about waking up. About waking up to purpose and joy and meaning and calling. A story about waking up to more. The more that is all around us all the time. That more perhaps symbolized by that ladder stretching to heaven. This is a story about waking up to the God who is at the center of life and meaning and calling. A story about waking up to the God who has been with you all along. Surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. God promised to Jacob, I am with you, and I will keep you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I will do. So often we pray to God to do something in our lives. Help me with this. Get me out of this situation. If you just get me out of this one, I promise I will. Right? We've done this. If you haven't done it recently, you've done it as a child, I'm sure. We all get to that place in our faith. Fix this or that in my life. Change this heart or this attitude or this behavior of this person or that person in my life, or maybe even of me. Show me something good, something beautiful, something to make me happy and bring joy. It's as if we are expecting God to change. To stop doing whatever God is doing and to start doing something that will fix life for us. But this story that we've just read, this story about Jacob, is not a story about God changing, but a story about Jacob. And what happens is really interesting, and it's really profound, and it's really simple, and it can change you, quite literally. You see, God didn't change, but Jacob did change. Jacob woke up. Yeah, he was on the ground and lying, and his head was on a stone, but I got to think, if my head's lying on a stone, I'm not sleeping too well. And yet, Jacob woke up. So if he was sleeping and he woke up, great, that's part of it, yes. But I think the woke up here is deeper than that waking from our slumbering sleep, our eyes closed, our mind turned off sleep. I think it's actually maybe a metaphor for the larger life that we live asleep to that purpose and that meaning and that longing and that deepest, purest thing that is right outside of maybe our grasp. What Jacob came to know that day was literally in the ground beneath him. Right? Remember the first thing that God said to him? The land on which you lie, I will give to you and to your offspring, and your offspring shall be like the dust, and you shall spread abroad to the east and the west. In other words, your life will be abundant, your descendants will be abundant, and it all starts with the ground on which you lie right now, and a gift and a promise. A promise from God that wasn't just about Jacob, but a promise that was about the entire world around Jacob. A promise that was about a presence in Jacob's life that was and is and always will be. You and I are laying on some ground too. And just like Jacob, there is always something in that ground beneath us, something just below the surface of what we're living and breathing and thinking and doing with our lives. That's something more, literally right beneath us. And it has everything to do with God's promises. It has everything to do with the way we live and the purpose and the meaning and the longing within us. Maybe we should spend more time asking that obvious question, what's in that ground right beneath us? I was in a leadership program in Charlotte that was put on by an organization called the Community Building Initiative. And the program, we called it LDI, and I'm struggling to even remember. I guess it was Leadership Development Initiative or something along those lines. It was a year-long program, and we met a whole day for once a month in the Charlotte community. Maybe not unlike the Harnett Leadership Program that's here right in this county, but this was really honing in on developing leadership skills among people who are working in nonprofits and faith-based communities and in governmental institutions. And this question that permeated the entire year was exactly what I've just offered to you. What's in the ground? And so we would joke with each other, what's in the ground? Whatever you just said or what you were thinking, what's in the ground of that? In other words, what's behind it? What's beneath it? What's right under the surface of what you just said, of what you're trying to do in your life, of what you're trying to do in your job, of what you're searching for? What's just below the surface? I've shared before, there's some great books that I've read that talk about going just below the surface of the meaning of passages that we read in the Bible and how that has everything to do with growing as a person of faith, because there's always meaning that's below the surface of what we think is there. And maybe if we woke up to the promise of God, who is the very ground of our life and the very ground of our being, then we would discover that something more, that something within the ground just beneath our feet that we're looking for. But before we get there, I need to tell you a story about a particular piece of ground in Richmond, Virginia, where Joni and I were in seminary. In the early 1960s, the city of Richmond, Virginia, built several schools. Among them was Norrell Elementary School. It was in a low-income neighborhood of color. The school and its students and its surroundings were plagued with problems from the very outset. There was an explosion in 1975 at a neighboring apartment building not long after the fire. A fire broke out on the playground of the school, burning for hours and hours and hours before being noticed and extinguished by authorities. Throughout much of the school's history, there have been reports of foul odors, noxious gases, and high numbers of headaches and coughing and asthma. Actually, leading eventually in the 1990s, the mid-90s, to a congressional hearing about this particular elementary school in Richmond, Virginia. The school was finally closed, and it was reopened. And then these problems surfaced again, and it was closed. And a year or two later, it was reopened. And again, this happened throughout, for decades this happened. Now, what's fascinating is that no matter how many times the school closed and reopened, because when it reopened, they said, okay, the problems are gone, we're not detecting any issues, any gases, any problems, let's open it again. Every time it happened, they found the same results. The same things ended up cropping up again. Fires that burned for no reason, headaches among students, all kinds of terrible things happening in this community to children, elementary school age children. What seemed most fascinating about this story is that nothing that they did ever seemed to work. There were efforts in the community to reduce criminal activity in the neighborhood to prevent arson. It didn't work. There were programs to assist minority children with chronic health problems, because this was predominantly a minority community, that provided better access to medical care, better education around chronic health problems, such as asthma. None of that worked. It didn't make a dent in any of the statistics that were coming out of this school. The school system worked to improve the school facilities through air quality tests, and they installed flammable gas and odor monitors. Neither of which ever produced any results saying that there were dangerous levels of gases in the school. Fires broke out, foul odors continued to be reported even when the school closed and opened. So despite research and testing and safety equipment and healthcare improvements and school and government programs and even a congressional inquiry, nothing worked to solve the problems at Norrell Elementary School. So, would it surprise you if I told you that the problems at Norrell Elementary School had nothing to do with the students, with the teachers, or the parents? Nothing to do with the economically disadvantaged people of the neighborhood. Nothing to do with lack of education or access to health care, or nothing to do with the school building or its facilities. Nothing to do with a lack of effort to resolve the problem on behalf of the community, the school system, or the government. Nothing to do with any of those things. Would it surprise you if I told you that Norrell Elementary School was built on top of a 1950s landfill? Despite public knowledge of that fact, there were government officials and school board members who over the years denied it. In the mid-1970s, there was an explosion in the playground, lit on fire, like for no reason, just boom, and there it goes. In the 1980s, there was another one. Tests never revealed any problems. Where was the problem coming from? Quite literally, what was in the ground that had been forgotten, that had been lost, that had been not paid attention to. When I was in seminary in Richmond, I read these statistics about Norrell Elementary School. This was back around 2002 or 3. I remember the stories when I was going back maybe 3 or 4 years ago and using this story in another sermon for another church. I went to try to find those statistics again so I could look them up and refresh myself from them. Couldn't be found. Had been wiped away somehow. The Fells Street landfill was below the surface of the ground of Norrell Elementary School. FEMA finally came in 2007 and did a report on the situation, and they said this at the end of the report, that, quote, landfill gas reaches a stable production rate at around 20 years once decomposition begins. Then it continues to produce, although at a declining rate, for the next 50 years or more. It is therefore expected that landfill gas is still an issue of concern underneath the Norrell Elementary School. It would be at least 2030 before we could even begin thinking about levels of toxic gases coming out of the ground for no apparent reason in that school and around that school below in the Fell Street landfill. You see, what's in the ground makes a difference. And when you are aware of what's in the ground around you, it changes things. It changes your perspective. It changes your decisions and your actions. It points us away from building our lives on top of toxic garbage heaps. And it points us towards looking for a place where there's a good foundation. So today we're embarking upon a new series, and I'll be sharing more about that series over the coming week. And in this series that we're going to kind of title Something More, it's going to be about seeing and about becoming more and more alive and aware. A series about finding that something more in life that we're all seeking. A series about paying attention to what is in the ground of your life. A series about how maybe you and I are spending too much time near some toxic goo that is bubbling up and poisoning us at random times that you can't even predict. About how sometimes we forget that that's the fact. Because things are going a little bit better and we've done some tests and it doesn't seem to be there. And so we open our life back up, but we haven't moved from that toxic garbage heap beneath us. This series is going to be about a healthier piece of ground to build our lives upon. About pulling yourself towards the God who is the ground of our being. As a famous theologian once said, something more about life than what you and I are living. Something more that is right beneath the surface of life, of everything that you and I do, everything we touch and taste and see and hear and speak and experience. That's something more that is right in front of us if we can just see it and name it and open our eyes to it. That's something more that brings depth and meaning and fullness to life. That's something more that nudges us to wake up. To wake up like Jacob and realize, maybe not for the first time, but maybe in a completely new and deeper and transcendent, life-giving, awe-inspiring way, that God is in this place in a way that I didn't know it before. But to get there, to get to that place, we're going to have to explore that something more. We're going to have to talk about that something more Too often we don't even really know what we're talking about when we speak about that something more. I sort of alluded to this. We speak in these cliche phrases and cliches and Facebook memes about who God is and who Jesus is and what God does and what Jesus does. And we don't even know what we're really saying. So we're going to need to examine what we talk about when we talk about God. We're going to need to examine what we talk about when we talk about Jesus. We're going to need to examine what we talk about when we talk about faith and spirituality. What we mean when we talk about a Savior. We're going to need to examine what we talk about when we talk about life and belief and truth and meaning. And at the end of all those conversations, I hope that you and I together will discover that something more is profound and enduring and meaningful and satisfying and powerful. And it's right beneath us and it's right there within our lives in a way that you never thought or imagined. But you'll have to stick with me throughout this whole summer. Next week and the week after and the week after and the week after. And if you do, I pray and I hope, and I've been praying for a couple of weeks now, that by the end of this series, as we dig deep in on these issues of faith, these words that we throw around, these topics and these ideas, the very God that is the ground of our being right beneath the surface, even in ways that we don't know right now, that when we get to the end of it all, you'll be able to look back and look within and look around and say, hey, now that's what I'm talking about.